Welcome to the Manor.
Welcome back to the Twin Terrors, Macabre Manor, Mead, Metal, and Mayhem. I'm Jody.
James. Thought I had him. Thought I had him messed up, but he... damn it.
Janet.
Oh, Dave. I rave for you. Anyway. So, Jody.
Yes.
What are we doing?
We're doing a podcast.
What's this podcast about?
Okay, I'll stop.
There's all sorts of shit.
I was going to say Mead, Metal, and Mayhem, but you know.
that's the same thing as I said.
Yeah. do you want to talk about what we're drinking first, or do you?
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay. What are you having?
Oh, so I bought a mixed pack of some Sierra Nevada beers, and I just finished a Ruthless IPA, so I just poured my Flipside Red IPA. It's got a little bit of ryeness to it. not just humor, but, you know, the malt.
Yeah.
nice and hoppy, and yeah, it's good. They had made it for a few years, and it was one of my favorite October beers, because it kind of got a weird, creepy autumn Halloween vibe on the label and stuff, but it came out just after that, and I'm still finishing it off.
Oh, cool.
Had a nooner too. Actually at noon for lunch. That was pretty good. That was in there, just a pilsner, but it was nice.
Cool.
It's good. What are you having?
Well, I just finished dinner. I had a McEwen's Scotch Ale with dinner. But I thought that instead of popping open another beer, I would pour myself a shot glass of Old Smoky Tennessee whiskey.
Nice.
The Amaretto.
That sounds damn good.
Oh, yes. Fine and dandy. As opposed to George Carlin, who, you know, could be fine or dandy, but never both at the same time.
Hair's fine.
Ah, that's some good stuff.
So all right. Well, thanks for joining us on today's podcast. I'm Jay. Sorry. But we have more, right?
Yes. Yes, we do. We are going to continue the saga of Deep Purple. We don't have much left on this.
Well, I'm not sure where my notes go then, because don't have a lot.
Okay. Well, we left off last time. We talked about the Deep Purple Mark IV lineup, which is where Tommy Bolin stepped in and replaced Ritchie Blackmore, and the recording of the album Come Taste the Band, and we were getting ready to talk about the tour. And I wanted to kind of devote an entire episode to the tour. So, when last we left off, Deep Purple was getting ready to go on tour to support the album Come Taste the Band, the Mark IV lineup, with Ian Paice on drums, John Lord on keyboards, David Coverdale on vocals, Glenn Hughes on bass and vocals, and Tommy Bolin had joined on guitar and also provided some lead vocals on the album. They'd done a show in Hawaii, I guess maybe kind of as a warm-up show for the tour, and then they went over to Australia and New Zealand. This turned out to be the high point of the tour.
Yeah. What countries did you say?
Australia and New Zealand.
Okay, perfect. I didn't miss my notes.
As we talked about in some of the Tommy Bolin stuff and in the previous episode on Deep Purple, there was some drug usage going on between a couple of members of the band. So Tommy Bolin and Glenn Hughes had handlers assigned to them, and they reportedly stayed clean and sober throughout this portion of the tour, according to Hughes. And I don't know this first sentence, this first thing he said in this quote, I don't know how true this is. You gotta remember, this was 1975. Back then, there were no drugs in Australia.
Yeah, you had to go find a spider and lick it.
Tommy and I would go off alone together and hang out. We were really tight without any drug activity, and it was fun. Okay, so they were sober. And apparently this translated well on stage. According to keyboardist John Lord, Bolin was playing like a god and was loved by the fans there. However, as John Lord would put it, and then we went to Indonesia, and it all went very pear-shaped.
They got that Indonesian junk that's going around.
Yeah.
That has to be an English thing, by the way, because Terry Pratchett uses pear-shaped a lot. Things go pear-shaped.
That's typically where I hear it is people from the UK.
And it just means things went wrong.
Yeah.
Not sure why it has to do with pears, and I'm not going to look it up. Or if I do, I'm going to let you keep going.
Okay. Did you have anything on the Australian tour or?
No, I don't have anything on Australia or New Zealand. That's why I was asking, but I do have some things on, well, Indonesia and what's coming next.
Okay. So while they were touring Australia and New Zealand, the band received an invitation to play in Jakarta, Indonesia. At the time, again, this was 1975, Indonesia was ruled by, quote, President, unquote, Suharto, who was known as more of a military dictator, also propped up by the US government.
We do not do that.
The band decided, however, to take advantage of an extra show before the tour went on to Japan.
Was it just one show? My note says two shows.
Well, let's let me let me
Okay.
expound on this.
Okay.
The story, as told in the band's 1983 biography and also in a documentary specifically about the Mark IV lineup called Getting Tighter, which you may remember was the title of one of the songs from the album. The band were told they would play a 7,000 seat theater. So their tour manager, Bob Cooksey, he goes over to check things out and he knew something was wrong when he gets there to inspect the venue. And instead of a 7,000 seat theater, it's an outdoor stadium that can hold up to 120,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. The stage, such as it was, as described as being made from orange boxes. So I'm guessing, like orange crates or whatever, crates that they were using to ship oranges.
No, okay. Thank you for clarifying. I was picturing like orange barrels, but orange crates.
Yeah. The security was being handled by the military.
Well, that's optimal.
The quote promoter, unquote, was a guy named Danny Sabry who had given the band a deposit of $11,000. Bob Cooksey said he tried to call the whole thing off once he saw the situation, but Sabry said they could renegotiate the deal. When the band arrived, they were informed a second show had been added.
Which is okay because they're going to get $1 million for two shows, right?
Well, I'll get to that. Is that what you had in your notes?
Yeah, I'm just trying to jump in with what I have at pertinent times.
Okay. And their arrival in Jakarta? According to Glenn Hughes, we fly into the jungle, and the pilot is telling me later that he couldn't see anything but jungle, and there was this small airstrip in Jakarta.
Brown trouser time, boys.
Yeah. Glenn Hughes and John Lord both talked about how, as they drove into the city from the airport, it was part of a procession that was driving through the city that included military vehicles. Crowds lined the streets as they drove through Jakarta. And Lord added, it was thousands and thousands of people. It was really odd, over the top odd, and as it turns out, portentously odd.
Dun, dun, dun.
So they played for over 100,000 people the first night. Bob Cooksey realized the band could be making about $750,000 for the two shows. He met with the promoters at the hotel, which devolved into an argument. Not long after that, things went from bad to worse. Glenn Hughes said, after the show, there was a bit of a party in my room. A couple of girls were in there in the room with Neil Slavin,
Woo!
Patsy Collins, and Patty Callahan, our security team. He also said there was an altercation between Patsy and Neil. He went on to say that Patsy Collins left the room, and less than a minute later, Hughes went out to find him. And as he describes it, there was an eerie silence. He was completely not there.
Well, I have notes, but I'm assuming that's where it matches up. So you keep going.
Yeah. Patsy Collins, quote, fell, unquote, 6 floors down in, quote, open, unquote, elevator shaft. The fall didn't kill him immediately. He was able to crawl out of the elevator shaft, which would have been, in the sub basement or whatever, crawled out of the hotel to a minibus that was sitting outside, crawled into it and said, "Hospital, hospital, hospital." So they took him to the hospital, and that's where he died. What did you have on that?
Might be jumping ahead, but if you want me, I just had a note that says there, I mentioned $1 million for two shows, but the band didn't get paid because promoters had a crew member killed and framed the band.
So Bob Cooksey, Paddy Callahan, and that's Paddy with two D's, like, double D's.
Yeah, Irish Paddy,
Yeah,
Padraig.
right, exactly. And Glenn Hughes were arrested in connection with Two Collins' death. Hughes was released that night to play the second show, which the band did at gunpoint. Before Deep Purple finished the set, the crowd started to riot and the police set dogs on them. John Lord described the second show thusly: "I remember playing the second night under huge duress. 'You will go on,' is what we were told, when we didn't want to go on. And I think we played 40 minutes with heads down and tears in our eyes, really."
Well, I'd probably be a bit stressed too.
I think I would have been. The next day, Bob Cooksey, Glenn Hughes, and Paddy Callahan had to appear before a judge who was wearing a military uniform with a bunch of medals and was playing with a revolver in front of them.
I'm fine.
The two girls from the party, someone I think mentioned that they were prostitutes.
No.
They came forward at the quote unquote trial and vouched for the guys who had been arrested, said they'd been in the room the whole night.
Well, that's good.
The judge called the whole thing an quote unquote unfortunate accident and let them go. But their passports had been taken and they had to pay to get them back.
Shake down.
The three of them were then taken directly to the airport, where the rest of the band were already on the plane. And you got to remember, at this point, they had their own private plane, but they couldn't take off because one of the tires had a puncture in it and needed to be replaced. So they start trying to get the equipment to replace the tire. They had to pay $10,000 for the equipment to change the tire, and no one at the airport would do it. The plane's crew had to do it, and the band had to help them.
Jesus.
Glenn Hughes just kind of summed it all up. "The idea of someone spinning a gun in front of me and my friend already dead, and then having to go to Japan to continue a tour was. I started to drink pretty heavily at this point."
I don't know who wouldn't drink heavily.
I think I would have too.
Even if you're a teetotaler up to that point.
As you said, they didn't get paid for the shows. When their lawyer from the US went to Jakarta to look into it and try to recover the money, he was reportedly chased around the meeting room with a machete.
Yeah, after hearing that story, I don't think I would have went.
I wouldn't
I'll go get your money. Good luck, dude.
either. Okay, so that's before they get to Japan.
I guess I should say I've got two notes, and I don't know exactly where they fit in the touring because they were general this tour. So I can give them now or I can give them later.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so, well, Tommy was told by Nazareth band members. So do you have anything about Nazareth, the
I do
band?
not. No, I do not.
So Tommy was told by Nazareth, the really cool kick-ass band, that he needed to clean up or he wasn't going to live. And Tommy goes, "Yeah, but Hendrix was so good." And I'm thinking, and Hendrix died young. And the other one is, do you have anything about how long Coverdale would be on stage?
No.
Coverdale would be off stage for 45 minutes out of an hour and 45 minute set due to all the solos and Hughes's singing. So he'd be on there for 60 minutes and off for 45.
Wow. I can see that though. Yeah, that actually makes sense. I will say this, the guys at Nazareth would not be the only people to say something like that to Tommy Bolin. There's a list.
Mm-hmm.
So the rest of the tour, while it certainly didn't get any worse, it definitely did not get any better. So what happened next? I've heard different versions of the story. I've heard that Tommy Bolin, because he was using heroin by this point, I've heard that he shot up morphine, and Glenn Hughes claims that it came from the promoter in Indonesia. I've heard that it was heroin. I've heard that it happened in Indonesia. I've heard that it happened in Japan, either as soon as they got to Japan or right before they did the show in Tokyo. I've heard that Tommy just simply fell asleep or passed out, either from drugs or alcohol, and lay awkwardly on his left arm, damaging the nerves or tendons, or that because he shot up whatever drug, one of Tommy's veins in his arm collapsed. Whatever combination of those comes out to be the truth, Tommy's ability to play was severely hampered, and he could only play like block chords.
Yeah, no, I just have a note that says Tommy passed out on his arm, probably from drugs, but just passed out and he
Yeah.
pinched a nerve so he could only do bar chords.
Right. Yeah, and I've heard variations on that. That's one of, that's kind of one of the things I've heard. But if the other thing I've heard about this is true, it would show some of Tommy's ingenuity. And I thought it was in the Getting Tighter documentary, but when I went back through it, I didn't catch it. But I was also fast forwarding and skipping over things because I was trying to focus on a few things. But supposedly, and like I said, I thought John Lord told this story. Tommy looked at his guitars once he realized his problem, and I think the band was even considering canceling the show. Tommy looked at his guitars and he said, "Yeah, this song's in this key. I can tune this guitar to that key. I can tune this guitar to this. I can tune this guitar to this." And he had the guitars set up where all he had to do was switch the guitars around and he'd be able to play the songs.
Well, he's a wise dude. I mean,
Yeah.
made some horrible life choices there, but he's really talented.
Yeah. So if this is true, it saved the show, although it still wasn't a perfect solution. His playing was still not up to par on his guitar solos, and some of the parts that he couldn't play, John Lord tried to cover on the keyboards. Hughes said John Lord had to pull him up on stage because his drug addiction, and I'm guessing when he says pull him up on stage, he means cover some of his parts. So, like pear-shaped, I think that's kind of a British colloquialism. John Lord had to pull him up on stage because his drug addiction had gotten so bad, he felt the music was getting in the way of getting high. And you got to remember, this is Glenn Hughes saying this, who was probably as bad as Tommy, except I don't know that Hughes was doing, I think his thing was cocaine. To make matters worse, the final Tokyo show on December 15th, 1975 was recorded for a live album.
I have a note that I just found that says, so the first European tour with Tommy came before all these, right?
I don't know that they toured Europe. They toured the UK at the end of this tour, but I don't know that they toured Europe. Did they?
I've got a note. All it says is that during the first European tour, the manager had sleeping pills for everybody to help with jet lag, and Tommy took all five from everybody and took them and then asked what they were.
The UK tour may have been before, or that, no, sorry, the European tour may have been before the UK tour. Because I've not seen anything specifically about a European tour, unless they did some shows. I was gonna say because they recorded the album in Germany, I think. So I'm thinking maybe they might have done some dates in Germany or in Europe
That could be,
while they
yeah.
were. But I don't know. I haven't really heard anything about that or read anything about that, but any of that's possible. I know the UK tour was the last leg of the tour. So maybe after the US portion of the tour, they did Europe and then the UK.
Could be, but in that case, the things I listened to about this got that really out of order. But that doesn't mean they're right.
That's, yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure the UK tour was the last part of the tour. So after Japan, they may have toured Europe. I don't know.
Well, I think it comes in before even Indonesia, but I don't know. Yeah, so fuck it. Let's just I'm happy to move on and not stress because I
Okay.
made these notes quite a while back.
Okay. So I do know after Japan, they toured the US, which was also seen as kind of disastrous for various reasons. One reason, Tommy Bolin insisted on playing the Ritchie Blackmore era songs, especially the guitar solos, in his own style, which was met negatively by most fans.
Yeah.
Chants of Blackmore's name or people yelling out, "Where's Ritchie?" plagued the tour.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'm going to say this about not necessarily just American fans, because this also happened in the UK, and I'll get to that in a moment. This was not unique. When Randy Rhoads died, the three guitarists who came after him, I cannot remember the name of the guy who filled in right after Randy died, but then they brought in Brad Gillis, who would later go on to be the guitarist of Night Ranger, to finish out the tour. And then Ozzy brought in Jake E. Lee as a permanent guitarist. And all three of these guys had to put up with people yelling out Randy Rhoads' name, you know, even though Randy was dead. He died in a plane crash, you know,
Yeah,
but
rude.
yeah, so people are just, I mean, they can be kind of jerks, as we all know. So this was something Tommy had, he was having to put up with on the US portion of the tour.
But Bernie Torme, by the way.
Bernie Torme, yes, yeah. But it was also something Tommy was kind of used to, because he'd actually, you know, kind of faced something similar when he was with James Gang. You know, having had replaced Joe Walsh and James Gang. And he claimed to have dealt with it at that point by having cards printed up with Joe Walsh's address to throw out to anybody who did that, and said he would do the same in Deep Purple. I don't know if he actually did that. But he said, you know, he said, "I'll just have Ritchie Blackmore's name and address printed on it and throw it out to him."
If you don't like it, go talk to Richie and tell him to come back.
Yeah. Now, not all the fans in the US did this, of course. And there were some who have, you know, been interviewed over the years or whatever, and said that, you know, while they were skeptical of Tommy Bolin taking over for Ritchie Blackmore, once they saw him perform, they were won over. So, you know, there's also some praise for him in this. However, there was no praise from Led Zeppelin drummer John Bonham.
I have a note on John, but you do yours and then I'll fill in if it's different.
Well, no, you might actually have more on this than I do.
All right. Well, so my notes for this are that part of the reason for the US tour was to stay out of the UK for tax exile, which we've discussed with Zeppelin anyway.
Yeah.
I did mention Tommy didn't want to get high with Hughes anymore because Hughes was just getting so bad.
That's
Just,
wow.
That's John Bonham punched Hughes for allegedly sleeping with his wife,
Okay. I've not
which
heard that.
I actually don't see Bonzo's wife doing that, but that doesn't mean that's not the rumor, and Bonzo didn't decide to punch him.
Yeah.
But then Hughes was getting so coked out that he called down to the hotel desk saying, "There's a man in a yellow hat outside my window trying to kill me," when he was on the 20th floor.
That's okay. Sounds about right.
Well, maybe the man with the yellow hat was trying to find Curious George.
I understood that reference.
those are my little notes there.
Okay. I didn't have any of those, actually.
Woohoo!
Yeah. But I know you know this story. So Zeppelin was getting ready to release an album, and we'll get into, you know, we'll have an episode or two or three or four,
Eight.
eight down the road on that album. And John Bonham was backstage at one of their shows in the US. He jumps up on stage, grabs a microphone, and said something to the effect that Zeppelin had a new album on the way, and Tommy Bolin sucked.
Ha 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 ha.
Now, and I mean, nobody, the Tommy Bolin book I was reading where they talked about this, nobody really defended Bonham on this. But, some people pointed out he was friends with Purple. He was friends with Ritchie Blackmore. He didn't like change. He didn't like big changes, and hiring an American to replace Blackmore just kind of didn't sit well with him. Not that it was any of his business, but yeah, so there's that. And he was also reportedly drunk.
No, what?
Yeah.
No.
This situation almost got worse because Tommy Bolin grabbed his guitar and was getting ready to hit Bonham over the stage with it, or hit him over the head with it, when the roadies pulled Bonham off the stage.
That's always a plus.
We just talked a couple of minutes ago about whether or not there was a European leg of the tour. I don't know. I do know the final leg of the tour was the UK. So if in the US the fans had occasionally chanted Ritchie Blackmore's name, the UK fans did it more often and a lot louder. They
Like
also
soccer hooligans.
They also actively booed the band, and especially Tommy Bolin.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. Drug use by Bolin and Glenn Hughes made matters worse. And in spite of the incident in Japan with Bolin's arm, he and Hughes were still heavily using drugs. And as a
Shocked.
result, the tour and the band came to an end at the Empire Theater in Liverpool on March 15th, 1976. According to John Lord, Glenn Hughes had said something to the audience. "I'm so sorry we're not playing very well, but we're tired and jet-lagged." Lord was pissed off about that, especially since he, drummer Ian Paice, and singer David Coverdale were very much playing well. Lord goes on to say, "So we came off stage. I went straight to my dressing room, which I was sharing with Ian Paice. And I said, 'That's it, isn't it?' And he went, 'Yeah.' And I said, 'That's absolutely, that's the end of the band as far as I'm concerned.' He said, 'Why are we doing this to ourselves?' So he and I just shook hands and said, 'It's over, thank God.' About 10 minutes later, bless him, Coverdale came in, hair all over the place, the big blustery guy that he is. And he said, 'I'm leaving the band.' And we said, 'David, there's no band to leave.'"
Yeah, I have exactly that note, except that you said that the ones who did good and Lords was pissed off because he knew it was Hughes and Bolin fucking everything up when Hughes was the one who apologized to the crowd.
Yeah.
But pretty much everything else, including that, David, there's no band to leave, are
Yep.
my notes for this last show.
After the tour and after the band broke up, Glenn Hughes took some time to get sober, briefly. He arrived at Ian Paice's wedding and said something to David Coverdale about getting ready to work on the next album. And that's how Glenn Hughes found out that Deep Purple had broken up. Because apparently nobody told him that night.
Whoops.
Yeah. Deep Purple would be shelved for the next 8 years, with the exception of the bogus Deep Purple, which we've mentioned previously. Guitarist Ritchie
Mostly you.
Blackmore. Huh? What?
Mostly you.
Mostly, yeah. Guitarist Ritchie Blackmore, as also mentioned previously, founded the band Rainbow. Singer Ian Gillan would form his own band, simply named Gillan, which would at one point include former Deep Purple bassist Roger Glover and current Iron Maiden guitarist Janet Gears, or
Getting
Yanni,
too old for
whatever,
this
however he
shit.
pronounces that. Huh?
Sorry, just doing the Glover thing.
Oh, yeah.
Riggs! Riggs! Getting too old for
Ian
this shit, Riggs!
Gillan would also at one point join Black Sabbath for one album and tour in the early 80s. We've talked about that. Roger Glover would work on several different projects in addition to joining Ian Gillan in his band Gillan. These other projects also include his work as album producer for other artists, the album Sin After Sin by Judas Priest being one of those albums. He would also go on to join Ritchie Blackmore in Rainbow. David Coverdale would record a couple of solo albums, which led to the formation of the band Whitesnake, where he would eventually be joined by Ian Paice and John Lord.
Did you know Bernie, the dude who played with Ozzy, was also in Gillen, Bernie Torme?
You know, I think you're right, he was. Wow. Is it, see, that's even more of the 6 degrees of deep black purple Sabbath. Glenn Hughes would battle his addictions for many years, which cost him a stint as the lead singer of Black Sabbath in the mid-80s, following Ian Gillan. The story is that Sabbath guitarist Tony Iommi punched Hughes in the nose and fired him during a rehearsal because Hughes was wasted.
Shocked. Shocked, I say. I have a note about Hughes.
Okay.
Now that after all this went down, Hughes would move in and then later marry Tommy's ex, Karen.
I will have more on that when we do the Tommy Bolin episode.
Oh, in that case, I definitely don't want to say the next two lines.
Yes, please don't.
The next one would have been okay, is the third one that...
Yeah, okay.
You know, the one where Tommy releases his live album that goes platinum and he attains godhood.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, that's my only little note left. I got to keep this fucking thing in notes.
Several compilation and live albums would be released over the next few years, including the live album Made in Europe. I forgot to mention this one at the time, but also not... I forgot to mention it, but it also... Okay, so Made in Europe was recorded by the Mark III lineup, but not released until after the band had broken up. So I guess what I forgot to mention was that there had been the recording of it, but it doesn't come out until October of 1976. But it was recorded during April of 1975 in Graz, I guess Graz, Austria, Saarbrücken, Germany, and Paris, France. And these were the last three shows Ritchie Blackmore played with Deep Purple before he left to form Rainbow. On March 16th, 1977, the December 15th, 1975 show that had been recorded by the Mark IV lineup in Tokyo was released as Last Concert in Japan. It was intended to just be released in Japan, but eventually it would be released in other markets. From what I've read, it was never released in the US or the UK. I do have it on vinyl, but mine was bought when we were in Germany. So mine was a European release of it. This release has been widely panned through the years, but apparently most of what people have complained about is due to the audio was sourced from a tape meant for a concert film, which was never finished or released, and that the concert was edited down to fit on a single album. This didn't just mean that songs were left off. Some of the songs were actually edited to be shorter. So it kind of chopped up the performances and made it sound even worse than apparently it was. I've not heard the full concert, but I do know that in 2001, the full concert was released as an album titled This Time Around, Live in Tokyo. I've heard it's better, but I don't think it's still very highly rated. So what about Tommy Bolin, you might ask?
Yes, I might ask. What about Tommy Bolin?
We're going to have another episode on him.
Aw.
Because that's going to be at least one more episode. Maybe two. Oh, I thought this was going to be two. We got this one down to one. So.
Woohoo! I only have two lines left.
Save them. Next week, I may have my Tommy Bolin notes typed up.
Which is what Glenn Hughes said, but no.
But yeah, that's it. That's Deep Purple through the 70s.
Woohoo!
I think eventually I would like to do the reunion and everything after, but I don't know that we'll go into as much detail as we did with this.
Well, that'll be up to you.
Yeah. We'll see.
I don't have anything else.
I don't either. You know what that means?
It's time to do a line of coke and hit on John Bonham's wife.
Okay, Glenn.
It's time for our wonderful listeners to go write us, review us, rate us.
Yeah, that.
Time for me to go get another beer for our next episode.
Ooh, yeah, that too.
Cool. But otherwise, I suppose it's time for me to say, I'm James.
I'm Jody.
Well, you can come taste the podcasters later.
Ew.
All right, we'll talk to
Just
you later.
yeah, bye.
The Macabre Manor is brought to you by the Twin Terrors. All rights reserved. Stay tuned for some fun outtakes.
I forgot I had unplugged my webcam earlier.
No. Whoops. Well, way to go. No.
You want me to start? Which one are we doing? Deep Purple?
Yeah. Yep. Deep Purple.
Okay. So if you can't say anything nice, don't say it.
Okay.
No, that's just kind of what it sounded like. It was just
No. It's just I've got notes, and some of them might go this time, some might go next time, and some of them are just miscellany.
miscellany. Okay.
Miscellany.
Miscellany. All right.
Take a drink for saying that wrong.
Mesothelioma.
Gimbatuk.
What about your schnoz?
Yeah, Cthulhu the Fox Doggin.
Ah, okay.
My snoz is an elder god.
Hey, you might not be wrong. I've seen the schnoz. Anyway.
Taking cover from the rain underneath that schnoz.
Ah,
Yes.
all right, I think I'm situated here.
I had to adjust myself too.
So what do you think? We should just press on and finish this one up, or
Up to you. Depends on how long you would like to edit an episode.
yeah, we can push through. This is going pretty quick, mostly because I have these typed up and they're easy to read.
Seen your writing. That's true.
Yep. One reason is you jumped too far there. Don't jump that far. That's too far. Go back, go back, go back. Okay. Sounds like a plan.
You got it, Hannibal. Pity the fool. Pity the fool who boxes Mr. T and then body slams him like Roddy Piper.
Yeah, that don't work so well.
Well, Roddy may have lost it from a DQ, but I think he won in terms of points.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Okay.